on the Cable Morning News. Small city near Corvallis is considering what may be the first all-volunteer police force in Oregon. Many towns have all-volunteer fire departments, but the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, which is the state's law enforcement accreditation agency, there has never been an all-volunteer police department. Without a model to follow, Adair Village faces questions about how to provide insurance and certification for officers and whether such a department is even possible. Several residents, including six with police experience, are willing to patrol their community for free. The Adair Village City Council will talk it over at a meeting this week, along with a possible contract for patrol services from the Benton County Sheriff's Department. Since the beginning of September, over 800 Hurricane Katrina victims have chosen Portland as their new home. To help evacuees acclimate into the community, Multnomah County and representatives from local social service agencies established a welcome center at Washington Monroe High School. KBOO's Robinette Diane reports.
When officials chose not to send Hurricane Katrina victims to Portland for shelter services, evacuees packed their belongings and came on their own. Once in the city, they can visit the welcome center located on Southeast 14th and Stark to receive free cash assistance, TriMet bus passes, search the internet, or speak with volunteers from the Red Cross and Salvation Army. Reynolds Santana is a 24-year-old evacuee from New Orleans. He says that Portland's one-stop service delivery system helps alleviate stress associated with the process of starting over.
And here at this place, what they do is they have the Salvation Army. They have everything that the Hurricane Katrina victims need all in one place, and they come here and do it all in one spot instead of running around all around town, going here, going there. Because in Texas, that's all you did. You just ran and ran and ran, and it's so hard to get around Texas, especially it's so big. The interstates are crazy out there. If you get on the bus, forget about it. It's going to take you at least 4 hours to get wherever you need to get to. That's just how it is. The bus systems are very bad.
Vernon Baker is the operations manager for Multnomah County. He says that without assistance from the federal government, Portland's social service community changed its format in order to accommodate the influx of evacuees.
They've made it appear on their own without any assistance or support from the government, which caused our services to somewhat be augmented, because we were initially set up to house some evacuees by way of a shelter. But since that wasn't the case, we turned our operations into more like a service delivery environment, where it was about 17, 18 different social service agencies housed in one particular building, providing a host and a litany of services to those evacuees.
Even after the devastating hurricane and long journey north, evacuees still express hope and optimism about their new city.
And I'm just here in Portland, Oregon, you know, best place to be right now for me. I'm really enjoying the city and the people. They've been so nice and wonderful. I just want to tell God bless everybody out here. You know, people from New Orleans really appreciate everything y'all doing for us here. God bless everybody out here. Mad love and respect.
For anyone wanting to help Katrina victims, contact the Red Cross, Portland chapter, or Multnomah County. I'm Robinette Diane, KBOO News.
It has taken a catastrophe to rekindle the national debate on poverty in the U.S. The wretched images of the poor left to struggle on the Gulf Coast in the wake of Hurricane Katrina provoked widespread shock, but the conditions exposed by the hurricane are not confined to the South or to the moment of the hurricane. According to the Census Bureau, poverty has been on the rise for the past 4 years. Despite a robust economy, the number of people living in poverty increased last year to nearly 13% of the population. That's the highest percentage in the developed world. Since President Bush took office, an additional 5.5 million have slipped below the poverty line. But the current political powers are not rushing to address long-term poverty. Items on the agenda in Washington include the extension of tax cuts on investment income and repealing the estate tax, both of which are aimed at the wealthy. Also proposed are tens of billions of dollars of cuts to services like food stamps, federal student loans, and Medicaid. President's vow to pay for reconstruction in New Orleans without raising taxes means further services are likely to be cut. Democrats have attacked the Bush administration for suspending the minimum wage requirement for companies working in the hurricane-hit region. The federal standard minimum wage of $5.15 an hour has not in any case been increased since 1997. Adjusted for inflation, it's at its lowest level since 1956. Most of the power is back on in the Northeast and New England after several days of rain and floods, but high wind continues to be a problem. At least a dozen people died, including a New Jersey woman killed yesterday by a falling tree limb at a recreational area. Authorities believe the limb was likely weakened by the heavy rains that soaked the state. In Connecticut, a woman died after falling into the rapids of the Natchog River. Massachusetts has lifted a state of emergency. New Jersey did the same Saturday night. Parts of the Northeast had more than a foot of rain since October 7th. Officials in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire continue to monitor swollen rivers and streams. Tropical storm Wilma formed today in the northwestern Caribbean, tying the record for the most storms in an Atlantic season and following a path that some forecasters believe could menace the Gulf Coast next week as a hurricane. Wilma is the 21st named storm of the season. 1933 was the only other time that many storms have formed since record-keeping began 154 years ago. This morning, Wilma had top sustained winds near 40 miles per hour, just above the threshold for tropical storms. It was centered about 205 miles southeast of Grand Cayman and drifting south around 5 miles per hour, but it was expected to turn to the southwest or west within the next day. Storms expected to bring 4 to 6 inches of rain in the Cayman Islands and Jamaica, with as much as 12 inches possible in some areas. Long-term forecasts show the storm heading into the Gulf of Mexico by the weekend. Forecasters said high water temperatures and other conditions were favorable for it to become a significant hurricane. A proposal to build up to 200,000 homes around a Southern California lake is sparking controversy. Under the plan by Salton Sea Authority Board, some of the homes could be built on a former atomic weapons testing site. Critics worry that development could eliminate resting and nesting places for more than 400 species of migrating birds. They also fear the 7,800-acre Salton Sea test base is possibly polluted with depleted uranium. The director of the Salton Sea Authority says there's no record of nuclear activities or material on the former base. The authority's board is scheduled to vote on the plan later this month. It must be approved by federal and state agencies. This past weekend, scores of people converged in Washington, D.C. for the Millions More March and Rally, commemorating the 10-year anniversary of the Million Man March. 10 years ago, about a million black men of various ages and backgrounds came to the nation's capital calling for personal responsibility. But Free Speech Radio News correspondent Selena Musuda reports that this year, organizers of the march are calling for government responsibility.
Dozens of speakers at the Millions More movement, men, women, children, are expected to address what they consider the problems and issues confronting the African-American community, including the issue of police brutality, reparations, the prison industrial complex, economic development, and more. Reverend Willie Wilson is one of the main organizers of the Millions More movement.
There will be plans that will be rolled out that will specifically speak to what our people can do within our community internally to repair, to rebuild, and reconstruct our community. And in certain instances, demands that we will be making on the government in terms of its culpability for things being the way they are. In the area of health, for example, some 65 million people in this country without health care. We're calling on this government to provide health care for all the poor and indigenous people of this nation.
National representative of the Nation of Islam, Minister Louis Farrakhan, will be the keynote speaker. Farrakhan organized the Million Man March and has been one of the chief organizers of the movement. The participation of Farrakhan and Malik Shabazz of the New Black Panther Party has spurred controversy, but Farrakhan dismisses the criticism.
You know, so many people said we like the message, but we don't like the messenger. That's like saying we like the fruit of the tree, but we don't like the tree that produced the fruit. It is not about those critics. It's not about what they think about Malik Zulu Shabazz or Louis Farrakhan. We're not in the room because of Louis Farrakhan or Malik Zulu. We're in the room because our people are suffering and our people are dying.
African-American lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender or LGBT activists from across the country will be making their way to the nation's capital to support the Millions More movement. Carlene Cheatham is a member of the D.C. Coalition of Black, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender.
Well, it isn't just the Millions More movement. It's really the black community that we're communicating to, where we've been, you know, with homophobia and oppression in our community, we've been separated from our families. Kids are being kicked out of their homes. And so we're really talking about the need for the black family to come together and accept their children. Because if we're talking about advancing the black race, you've got to include all of it. And you've got to be able to see that each of us have something to offer.
A couple of blocks away from where the Millions More March will be held, there will be a rally and protest sponsored by the National Black Justice Coalition, which is a black LGBT civil rights organization. Ricky Green of The Portal, a Baltimore-based black LGBT resource center, does not want the media or critics of the Million More March to use this protest as a way of saying black communities are more homophobic than white communities.
Homophobia is not that intrinsically festering black society as people want, you know, everybody else to think. The African-American perception of who we are and what we do is primarily based upon white mainstream gay America. So far as, because homosexuality in the black community has always been accepted to an extent, because we've been like pillars of the community also.
Right at airtime, it was just learned that Keith Boykin, the president of the National Black Justice Coalition and longtime gay rights activist, was invited to speak at Saturday's march by Farrakhan. From the District of Columbia, this is Selena Masuta.
Rioters in Toledo, Ohio, have attacked police and set fire to property and overturned cars, apparently in protest at a planned neo-Nazi march. The BBC reports police have made at least 20 arrests and local officials have declared a state of emergency. They issued an all-night curfew. Reports say a crowd of at least 500 people was involved in the violence. A small neo-Nazi group of around 20 had gathered in a park to hold a march escorted by police. The group dispersed when the violence broke out and the march was canceled. The mayor of Toledo, Jack Ford, said the violence was triggered by gang members, angry that the neo-Nazi march had been allowed. Mr. Ford said people accused him of protecting the Nazis, and a masked man threatened to kill him when he tried to calm the protesters. More than 65 people were arrested, and order could fully be restored only after 4 hours. Several police officers and firefighters were injured in the brawl, which at one point was thought to have involved about 600 people. The U.S. National Intelligence Director, John Negroponte, has announced plans for a new intelligence service to be administered by the Central Intelligence Agency. FSRN's Joseph McDonald reports from Washington, D.C.
The newly proposed National Clandestine Service will coordinate all U.S. foreign human intelligence efforts in a bid to regain credibility after Iraqi and 9/11 intelligence failures. The BBC is saying that the new office will be led by an undercover intelligence officer known only as Jose. The unknown official will report directly to CIA Director Porter J. Goss. The National Clandestine Service will be responsible for all foreign human intelligence activities, including those currently under the supervision of the FBI and the Department of Defense. This new distribution of roles leaves the CIA in a dominant position over the other agencies. But sources from Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte's office say that the CIA will not interfere with the internal affairs of the Department of Defense or the FBI. How much real control the National Clandestine Service will have over the different agencies, and whether it will be capable of pulling U.S. human intelligence efforts together without sinking into interdepartmental rivalries, remains to be seen. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Joseph McDonald in Washington, D.C.
A foreign election observer confirms that Iraq's constitution seems assured of passage. The vote count continues today, but initial results showed minority Sunnis have fallen short in an effort to veto it at the polls. The observer spoke to the Associated Press today on condition of anonymity. He says the Iraqi Independent Electoral Commission will announce the official results later this week when the vote counting is complete. The reported acceptance of the Constitution is a major step in the attempt to establish a democratic government that could lead to withdrawal of the U.S. troops. But critics warn Sunni objections could also lead to deeper divisions. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice warned yesterday that violence will continue in Iraq even if the new constitution is adopted. She says support for the insurgency will eventually wane as the country moves toward democracy. a UN rights advocate, has accused U.S.-led coalition troops in Iraq of cutting off food and water to force civilians to flee before launching attacks on insurgent strongholds, a claim that the U.S. military flatly denies. Gene Ziegler, a U.N. expert on food rights, cited reports from private organizations and the media in making the accusations. He said the Geneva Conventions on Warfare forbid denying food to civilians. A U.S. military spokesman in Baghdad, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Boylan, dismissed the criticism as inaccurate. He said in an email, "Any accusations of coalition forces refusing basic needs from the citizens of Iraq are completely false." Ziegler conceded that the U.S. saves lives by removing civilians from the line of fire. This from Reuters. An American envoy says he'll press North Korea for specific plans on dismantling its nuclear weapons program and ways its nuclear-free status can be verified. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson also used 3 days of talks in Pyongyang to urge North Korean officials to allow humanitarian groups to operate more freely in the country. Richardson is a former congressman and a UN ambassador, and he's considered a likely Democratic candidate for president in 2008. He isn't an official representative, but says he supports the Bush administration's policy of working with North Korea through six-party nuclear talks. The most recent round of talks ended with North Korea pledging to abandon its nuclear program, which it claims has already yielded a weapon. Police arrested a former Syrian intelligence officer who is considered an important witness in a UN investigation of the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. Officials say Mohammed Zuhair al-Siddiq was taken into custody yesterday in the Paris area by France's DST counterintelligence service. The officials said that he was the subject of an international arrest warrant and is expected to be extradited. Judicial officials in Lebanon said the arrest warrant, issued by Lebanese magistrate Elias Aid, accused al-Siddiq of giving false testimony and misleading the UN investigation. Al-Siddiq has been billed by Arab media as being a leading witness in the inquiry by Chief UN Investigator Detlev Melis of Hariri's February 14th killing. A Chechen warlord says he's behind last week's militant attacks in the southern Russian city of Nalchik that left at least 137 people dead. Shamil Basayev makes the claim in a statement posted on a Chechen rebel-connected website. Previous statements on the web said the attacks were carried out by Chechen rebels, but today's statement is the first claim of a direct connection to Basayev. He also says the leader of the group that conducted the attack itself is, quoting here, "busy preparing other work that I have assigned him." In the statement, Basayev claimed 41 militants and about 140 security officials of Russia were killed in the fighting and that three Russian helicopters were destroyed. Official Russian accounts say more than twice that many militants and far fewer security forces were killed, along with 12 civilians. A longtime Catholic peace activist in New Haven, Connecticut, was fired last week from his teaching job over his refusal to permanently display the American flag in his classroom. FSRN's Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven.
Stephen Cobesa has taught in Catholic schools in Connecticut for 25 years, the last six at Colby Cathedral High School. He never displayed an American flag in his classroom because he believes that the gospel is his moral touchstone, not any nation's laws or customs. Many of his students, upon hearing of his dismissal, rallied in his support in the halls of the school. And some teachers urged their colleagues to wear black armbands today to support his freedom of expression. Cobesa did not belong to a union, but the teachers' association at his school declined to support him.
The action taken against me, you know, was so undocumented, arbitrary, and without any justification, though I sought one. It's impossible for me not to think that loyalty to a nation is here being placed over fidelity to the gospel.
No authority at the school has explained why it suddenly became mandatory for Cobesa to display the flag after 6 years. A statement from the Archdiocese of Bridgeport confirming Cobesa's dismissal said, in part, "Our Catholic schools provide a dynamic learning environment in which respect for the opinions of others as well as respect for school property are both key components. The Diocese of Bridgeport has long believed that the American flag is an important fixture in its Catholic school classrooms." For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New Haven.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
The Israeli government suspended contacts with the Palestinian Authority and imposed travel restrictions on the West Bank today after gunmen killed three people in two drive-by shootings. Five people were wounded in the attack near the Gush Etzion block of Jewish settlements yesterday, which was the deadliest since July. It followed in Israeli intelligence warnings that Palestinian militants who claim they drove Israel out of Gaza by force would now shift their focus to the West Bank. Last month, Jewish settlers were forced out of their homes in Gaza and four West Bank communities under Israel's disengagement plan. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, a militant group with ties to the ruling Fatah Party, claimed responsibility for yesterday's attacks. However, security officials said they believed Hamas might have been involved. The World Health Organization says all evidence so far shows that the H5N1 virus does not spread easily from birds to infect humans. The agency is calling on rich countries to be more generous in providing financial and technical assistance in efforts to combat bird flu in Asia, as WHO's regional director in Asia says that while a global pandemic is possible, it is also preventable. FSRN's Gurley Linao in Manila reports.
Dr. Shigeru Omi, WHO's regional director for the Western Pacific, says he has no illusions about the dangers confronting the world amid the threat of the deadly avian influenza virus. He acknowledges that a global pandemic is a real threat because the H5N1 virus is very unpredictable, entrenched in Asia, and spreading. The United Nations Coordinator for Avian and Human Influenza has warned that as many as 150 million people could die if the outbreak spreads worldwide. In that scenario, the WHO's official estimated death toll is between 2 million and 7.4 million. However, amid the gloomy forecasts, Dr. Omi says international cooperation could manageably head off a pandemic.
That the momentum is now building up among the international communities to help these affected countries, because now it seems that the donor countries and the international community realize that unless the so-called rich countries help, it is very difficult for affected developed countries alone to fight this disease.
Dr. Omi says at least $260 million is needed to help affected countries combat the H5N1 virus in the short term. The money would be used to improve technological capacities to detect, diagnose, and contain infections. It would also help stockpile the anti-influenza drug Tamiflu.
Financial and the technical support is very, very important. It's easy for the countries to come up with a plan, but as you rightly said, in order for this plan, good strategy to be implemented, you need the resources. Financial, technical, all the resources.
But Dr. Omi stresses affected countries must also cooperate and be completely transparent to improve the situation. He calls for more prompt information sharing, especially with laboratory samples for testing. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gurley Linao in Manila.
3 days before Saddam Hussein goes on trial for crimes against humanity, human rights groups have raised profound concerns about the independence of the court trying him and whether it meets international standards. Among other issues, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have expressed unease about limits on the ability of the accused to mount a defense, the burden of proof, political sway over the court, and the use of the death penalty. Questions also surround the fact that the Iraqi government has passed new laws governing the court but has not yet brought them into force. Those new statutes could take effect in the next few days or after the trial begins, raising further doubts about the clarity of procedures. Saddam and seven others are due to appear in court on October 19th on charges of premeditated murder in the deaths of more than 140 Shiite men from the village of Dujail, north of Baghdad, following a failed attempt on the then president's life in 1982. Amnesty and Human Rights Watch are due to have observers in the courtroom on October 19th, although it's not clear if passes provided by the U.S. authorities for access to the fortified Green Zone compound, where the court is, will be granted on time. At least 32 inmates have died in a fire during an uprising at a prison in Argentina. Authorities say, Argentine television station TN said prisoners began rioting after a request for longer visiting hours on Sunday for Mother's Day was rejected. Tien said about 200 inmates rebelled at the prison in Magdalena, southeast of the capital, Buenos Aires. A BBC correspondent in South America says riots and fires are increasingly common in Argentina's jails. The jails have become overcrowded in the last decade as the country has faced a serious crime wave following the collapse of the economy four years ago. Local reports say hostilities arose over demands for better visitation rights and improved living conditions for the reported 1,700 inmates. So far, a landmark federal trial over whether intelligent design should be introduced in public school science classes has featured teachers and parents against the move. Now the defense has its chance. Lawyers for the Dover Area School Board were to begin presenting their case today, defending the decision a year ago to require students to hear a statement on intelligent design before ninth grade biology lessons on evolution. The statement says Charles Darwin's theory is not a fact, has inexplicable gaps, and refers students to a textbook called Of Pandas and People for more information. Mainstream scientists have rejected intelligent design as scientifically untested and contend that its supporters focus on attacking evolutionary theory rather than providing evidence for design. And as a treat for TV viewers during the month of Ramadan, the Dubai-based satellite network NBC has dubbed into Arabic 30 episodes of The Simpsons and is showing them twice a day. The Simpsons are the Shamsoons. Bart, the skateboarding gum-chewing delinquent, has become Botter. Homer, his slobbish dad, has become Omar and has given up Duff beer and pork sausages, at least for the duration of Ramadan. NBC, which has heavily promoted the series, signed up several of the most popular Egyptian actors, including Mohamed Hanidi and Hanan Turk, to provide new voices for the character. The decision to have them speak in Egyptian dialect is unusual, according to Lindsay Wise of the Adam Center for Television Journalism at the American University in Cairo. She says dubbed foreign cartoons tend to be put into classical Arabic for educational purposes. This is much more casual. But a blogger known as the Angry Arab wrote, "They were so unfunny and so annoying, those Arab actors. The guy who played Homer was just one of the most unfunny people I ever watched. Just drop the project." This has been the Cable Morning News for Monday, October 17th. Jim Thompson edited the news and is running the board right now. I'm Blaine Palmer. Portland weather mostly cloudy this morning, then partly sunny, highs around 65 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain and lows around 50. This has been the Cable Morning News. Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River, on translator K220HR. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 7:30 on More Talk Radio, Cecil Prescott speaks with members of an Afro-Colombian peace community endangered because of the recent escalation of the Colombian conflict. And in the later part of the show, the guest will be a representative of the Oregon Bus Project. They're holding a forum on election reform. At 9 on the Old Mill Variety Hour, guests include Grace Chang, author of Disposable Domestics, about immigrant women workers in the global economy, and Stephen Solds, a Boston psychoanalyst who manages a website on Iraq's resistance, talks about distinguishing between resistance and democratic movements. At 10, it's the food show with the KBOO Food Collective, and at 11 o'clock, hear Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Thanks a lot for listening to KBOO. Please call us with your comments about this news broadcast and your thoughts about the dubbing of The Simpsons. Have a great day.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Monday, October 17th, 2005. Conduit Dance, the hub of contemporary dance in Portland, asks you to join them this week, the third week in October, for performances, free technique classes, a lecture demonstration, master classes, and a rousing closing night dance party. The Conduit Dance Studio is in downtown Portland near the corner of Southwest Yamhill and Park at 918 Southwest Yamhill, Suite 401. Details of this week's activities are on their website at conduit-dance.org and also by phone from Eric at 503-459-3030. The War Resisters League, Portland Chapter, is holding War Rat Tax Resistance Workshop tonight at Laughing Horse Books, located at 3652 Southeast Division Street in Portland on TriMet No. 4 bus line. Information is available by phone at 503-238-0605. The Pumpkin Patch on Sobey Island provides free hay rides every day in October on weekends from 10 to 6 p.m. and on weekdays from noon to 6 p.m. The Pumpkin Patch and Maze also offers cow train rides for kids and the world-famous 5-acre corn maze, open now daily and evenings too. The location on Sobey Island is in Portland at 16511 Northwest Gillihan Road. The website is thepumpkinpatch.com, and information is available by phone from Carrie at 503-621-3874. For our listeners around Oregon State University and KWU's Corvallis repeater station, Ira Shore, National Field Director for Physicians for Social Responsibility, will lead lively discussions on preventing nuclear terrorism and smarter approaches to local and national security. The presentation is at 7 p.m. tonight, Monday the 17th, and it's free and open to the public. Donations are optional. The location is in Corvallis at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Center at 2945 Northwest Circle Boulevard. The website is oregonpsr.org, and information is also available by phone to Richard at area code 541-760-1312. Also in Corvallis tonight, writer and activist Phyllis Bennis will speak about her recently published book called Understanding the Palestinian and Israeli Conflict. Her talk is sponsored by the Institute for Peace and Justice, the Olmedy Peace Seekers, and the Corvallis Friends of Middle East Peace. That's at 7 p.m. tonight at the Oddfellows Hall at 223 Southwest 2nd Street in downtown Corvallis. For more information, you can phone David at 541-737-3851. Phyllis Bennis will also be speaking in Portland coming up this Thursday evening, October the 20th. The KWU Programming Committee is running an evaluation of all KWU's programs that air on Monday and Tuesday. And the most important evaluations are those that come from you, KWU listeners. More information, including downloadable program evaluation forms, appears on KWU's homepage at kboo.fm. Evaluation forms are also available at KWU Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, just east of the Burnside Bridge. Most events on today's on-air community calendar also appear on KBOO's online community calendar. Information on these and other community activities is available during business hours from KBOO receptionist at 503-231-8032. This has been the KBOO community calendar on air for Monday, October the 17th, 2005. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 in Portland for Oregon, USA.